Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Life's busy. Take this deck. There's heaps to do on it. Like, polishing off this wine. That's tough. Life's pretty good with a Trex deck. Composite decking with no hard maintenance. Trex, the world's number one decking brand.
Welcome to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show, made possible by our friends at Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Today, we're joined by one of Australia's bright boxing hopes and our leading middleweight contender, but don't let the pretty boy nickname fool you. Michael Zarafa's story is one of resilience and dogged determination throughout a professional journey that's now more than a decade long, and the Craigieburn native will soon fight for the IBF middleweight title and a belt that would represent the crowning moment of his career. Michael, welcome. Thanks a lot for your time, mate.
Thanks for having me, brother. It's good to be back.
These are big moments in your career. I mean, your life. I mean, an IBF middleweight title fight. How do we find you now? What sort of place are you in right now?
Training is intense. That's one thing I can definitely say. But I'm exactly where I want to be, physically, mentally, emotionally. I'm trying not to overdo it. I'm just trying to enjoy the process as well and just trust the journey, really, and just listen to the team. The hardest thing is just rocking up. You know, as soon as you rock up, I just do what my team says to do. And like I said, I do it with a smile on my face. And hard work pays off. You know, there's been times where, you know, the door's been slammed in my face 1,000 times and I just never gave up. And I just believe that one day I'll be a world champion. And, you know, I get to live that dream very, very soon.
How old are you now?
I'm getting on 30 years old now.
And how old were you when you wanted this? Because it crystallised pretty early for you.
Yeah, it's a strange story, but I was 7 years old.
Seven.
And I said to my mum and dad, I said, you know, one day I'm going to be a world champion and I'm going to sell out stadiums and have more money than I know what to do with.
It's a staggering moment of clarity for a seven-year-old. Yeah. So, you know, you've beaten many. You've beaten Jeff Horn, Isaac Harman. So your 30 wins, 4 losses, 19 knockouts in your pro career. Is there a real sense of, and you might be trying to put this to one side for now and talk about what's in front of you, of course, but is there a real sense of, I've been building for this for my entire life?
100%. Yeah, like it was inevitable for me. So I always knew it was going to happen. And it's so strange, like even in other interviews and on TV and stuff like that, people say like, how did you know? And I'm like, I wish I could, there's a word or some way I could describe. You know, I just always believed, no matter how dark it got, that I was going to be a world champion. You know, every time there was no bright light at the end of that tunnel, I just said, you know, it's all right. It will happen. It's just a matter of time. And I just kept going through the motions and let it all build up until now. And this is where it all, gets released.
Esquiva Falcao, he'll be the man you're fighting later on this year. Brazilian southpaw, 30-0, 24 knockouts. So he's never tasted defeat.
Well, he's never tasted defeat, but I'll have to clarify a few things because there's a spanner that's been thrown into works.
Go on.
So even bigger and better things have just come into play now. And it was Esquiva Falcao for the IBF world title, but recently, I've just moved to number one in the WBA in the world. And the man that we look like we might be facing is Gennady Golovkin, Triple G.
Right.
Who's the biggest name in boxing, who's recently just come off his only defeat against Canelo Alvarez. And this is going to be a huge fight. And his talks that it might be in Australia, in Melbourne.
Hang on, this is a curveball.
For all the gold, yeah. So I didn't want to fix you up at the start with the beautiful introduction, but there's a spanner in the work and it's worked out even bigger and better. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm ranked across all four sanctioning bodies. I'm number one in the world now in the WBA, number two in the IBF, which was Falcao's mandatory. But Gennady Golovkin's come back down to the middleweight and kept his titles. And he's picked me for the man to be, next in line.
So what date are we talking?
Well, it's looking like March next year.
Right.
But I'm off to Orlando December 11 to fight a Mexican. And to put it all on the line over there. So I'm a very, very busy man in the next couple of months.
Jeez. So obviously, I'm sitting across from you now. It's hard to imagine a more physically demanding sport. I mean, mentally challenging too, of course, which we might get to that a little bit later on. The demands on the body, the sacrifice. I mean, you mentioned the training off the top. What does that look like in the moment? Can you explain it for the layman at the moment, what you're going through?
Yeah, look, every day, it varies, you know, where one day I might get up and do, you know, cardio and running and on the track, and then, you know, you've got your sparring, your pad work, your bag work, your strength and conditioning, your swimming. It's the only sport I believe that has everything involved in one. And I'm training 5-6 hours a day. In between that, I've got obviously, you know, recovery sessions, you know, media commitments. So it's a pretty full-on day. But you know, again, it was inevitable. And I truly believe in my slogan's BFG, and it was born for greatness. Yeah. I truly believe I was born for this.
Fantastic. You're listening to This Is Your Journey. Thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. 7 years old. Incredible age to have a moment of clarity around your path in life. Well, how did Michael Zarafa get here? We'll chart his rise after this.
You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, it's great to have your company on This Is Your Journey. It's made possible by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. We're chatting to, Australia's number one fighter, Michael Zarafa. Michael, born in Melbourne, raised in Craigieburn. What sort of family was yours?
Well, my mum's crazy. She's Maltese, and my dad was just a hardworking man, and you know, we're never a rich family. We just did what we had to do to get by. You know, got a brother and a sister, an older sister, a younger brother, and yeah, man, we were just a happy little family. Mm. We didn't really do anything too extreme, but you know, again, at 7 years old, I knew I wanted to be a world champion. So I just stuck.
What did your folks do when you were a little tacker?
As in occupation,
yeah.
My mum's a nurse, and my dad worked at the airport for 30-odd years.
So that Maltese heritage, is that a big part in your upbringing?
It's something I'm starting to find more now as I've gotten older. You know, I wasn't really interested as a kid. I just wanted to be out and about and playing around. But as I've gotten older, yeah, I've definitely found a little bit more into where I'm from and what it's all about. But yeah, my family are pretty strict in what they do.
So as we said, you're seven when you decide you want to go all the way in the ring. Was it Roy Jones Jr. you were watching?
Roy Jones Jr. I was watching him, and I was like, man, I can do this.
It's over, and I think it's over for the champion, at least as the super middleweight champion. Roy Jones Jr., splendid indeed, splendid enough for the upset, or at least so it appears, Joe Wilson.
And Jerry Roth has it, 118 to 109 for the winner by unanimous decision, and new super middleweight champion of the world, Roy Jones Jr.
You know, I don't know what was more crazier, you know, watching the Roy Jones Jr. fight at seven, or thinking I could match these guys at 7 years old. But I was like, you know, these guys just have a bit of discipline, a bit of dedication. It doesn't look that hard. I can do that. And, you know, I walked into the boxing gym, and I actually did it more for a fitness side of things, because I was playing, you know, like under 10s footy and stuff like that. And
yeah.
I was kicked back then. And I said, you know, I'll just do it as a fitness kind of thing. And then as soon as I put my first pair of gloves on, I was like, they're not coming off.
Yeah, right.
And that was it for me. That was the turn of the career. And I said, I'm going to be a world champion.
Because most parents, I mean, the thought of their son or daughter getting into the ring might scare them stiff.
So oh, it still does now.
How did your
My mum reckons I've aged her 30 years. I said, Mum, you're just using that excuse. You're getting old, mate. You're getting old.
No, I'm a parent. I don't blame her.
Yeah, yeah. She look, she stresses out. She always says, like, I guess every mother does, just to be a model. But it's definitely not the case for me. I just want to fight, win a world title. But look, they get behind my career, and they show their love and support. My dad acts like he's a tough man when I fight, but I can see that he's worried. But it is what it is, you know.
Proud?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, they definitely. You know, my mum, she keeps all her newspaper articles and Herald Sun in her bag, and she rips out it to people. This is my son. And
how good.
It's embarrassing. But, I mean, look, you got to love him.
It doesn't matter if you're playing local footy for Craigieburn or you're doing what you're doing.
Correct.
All mums are the same.
100%. And that's what she says. She goes, why couldn't you just be a model? I say that. Why couldn't I just be a singer? But unfortunately, I took the hard road, always.
Oh, well, if you've got a tune for us, we'll belt one out a little bit later. So when did it actually start then? It's one thing to want it and dream of it, but the gloves on and the training, how did that manifest itself in reality as a young fella?
Yeah, so like I said, I was playing Auskick footy, just like local. And then I was just doing it for fitness. And then at 13 years old, I said, you know, let's have an amateur fight, you know, and that's with the headgear and, you know, the big pillow gloves. And I had, I think, about 10 straight wins. And that was like an addiction for me. I was like, man, I just want to keep winning until I had my first loss. And then I said, I don't want to feel this ever again.
Yeah.
And I sacrificed my whole life. And it was tough, financially, mentally. It was just, I gave up literally everything. I dropped out of school. I did everything I could to make my career as good as it can be. And, I did it the hard way. I built my name with my two bare hands. I didn't have a famous father or have anyone in the family that was successful. I said, I want to build my own name. And that's exactly what I did. And I just got there with grit, and determination and sacrifice. And, I went without to hopefully have it all. And that was my thing, to each one, to give back. It's always been my thing. And that's my main motivation. It's not about me. I said to everyone, I died years ago. It's not about me. I do this for the people that can't. I want to be a role model for people. To get up in the morning some days, I'm like, I can't be bothered and I'm tired. And then realize how selfish that is, because there's people that, would love to be where I'm at. There's kids that, unfortunately can't see or they don't have use of their body and limbs, And for me to say I can't be bothered and I'm tired, it's just a disappointing excuse. And this is what I do, to see people, their reactions when I walk into a room, it puts a huge smile on my face, ear to ear. And it's the reason why I get up and do what I do, honestly.
So
those days, that's tough.
You had the vision early, but am I right in saying you also had the dedication really early as well? Can you let us a bit into that? I mean, most kids would wag school to hang out at the milk bar and, get a few chupa chups, but you were doing it to go to the gym.
100%. Yeah, I was literally wagging school, and my lunch money, I was giving it to my trainer. He was an old man, and I was giving it to him. And I was first in the gym, and that was my thing, first in, last out. Early mornings, late nights, I'd get up before school with one of my good mates who's in the army now, and we'd go, 3:30, 4 in the morning, we'd be going for runs. And we're only kids, we're only teenagers. And, then I'd come home, shower, I'd go to work or my apprenticeship back when I was 15, 16, because I dropped out of school. And and then I'd train again. And
What'd you do for the apprenticeship?
I was a chippy carpenter. Yeah, right. And then I absolutely hated it. Anything I did, I hated, to be honest, because, on my lunch break and stuff, I was like, I don't want to be here. I want to be a world champion.
Yeah.
This isn't my life. I don't want to be here. And no matter what I did, I tried everything. I worked at the airport. I did my apprenticeship. And I just hated it.
What'd you do at the airport?
I was marshalling the planes. I was on tarmac, doing all the baggage handling, and my dad was my boss. So it was
really?
It was pretty hard.
That can't end well.
It was the worst. Even on the radios, I'm like, Dad, he's like, mate, you can't say Dad through a radio. And, it was awkward. But for me, like I said, I knew where I wanted to be, and that was a world champion. And I literally just want to give back. That's my number one thing. And it sounds crazy. I don't fight for me. And people say, oh, like, you should. I say, no, I fight for everybody else. The people that that believed in me, and also the people that didn't, it puts more fuel in the fire.
So the amateur stuff, 2010 Australian Golden Gloves champion, and then you turn to the professional stuff. Now, 18 at first professional fight?
Yeah, it was on my birthday.
Fighting out of the ring corner, trained by Daryl Ford from the Winroy Boxing Gym. Official weight, 70 kilograms even. Standing 5 feet 9.5 inches tall. Tonight wearing black shorts with yellow trim. And fighting out of Craigieburn, this man was a state Golden Gloves champion in 2010. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Michael Prettypaw.
They almost weren't going to let me fight because I was 17 at the weigh-in. And then they were like, well, technically you're not 18. And I was like, well, technically I'm fighting tomorrow. And I'm 18
didn't
years
waste,
old.
Typically didn't waste any time.
So, I was literally on my 18th birthday. And then I fought. And again, I had 18 consecutive wins. I fought everybody.
Oh, Michael's a rapper here. Got all the moves. Looking good. Lands a nice right hand. Good ring movement here from Michael Prettypaw Zarafa. Oh, letting the punches go. Oh, and goes now for Kratos. This could be all over.
Six.
I don't think he's getting up.
Eight. Nine. All over.
Zarafa wins in the first round. What an exciting debut.
The hair does look good, though, I've got
to say. It's pretty sharp, yeah.
Amazing. I'm
Oggy,
scared to
barber,
look at it.
I've got to give him a shout-out. Oggy, my man, he's definitely the one to go see in Roxburgh Park.
Okay, what's it called?
His name's Oggy. Oggy Barbers.
Oggy Barbers.
Yeah,
he does
the best.
A great job, Oggy. That's sharp as. You're with This Is Your Journey. It's brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funeral, Celebrating Lives. You can find them online, tobinbrothers.com.au. We'll be right back with Michael Zarafa right after this.
You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, we hope you're enjoying this week's edition of This Is Your Journey. Today's guest, boxing world title hope Michael Zarafa. So Michael, the highs and the lows. Let's perhaps start with the former, stopping Jeff Horn, August 2019. No one gave you a chance. I think he'd had a points win not long before, a year or two earlier, Manny Pacquiao, of course. I think even your own team were cautioning you for taking it on, and you stopped him in the ninth. It was Horn's first loss to an Aussie professional. How big was this moment in your career?
It was huge because, you know, for me, when I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And, you know, prior to the fight, everyone was like, oh, you know, you're mad. You're crazy. You know, he just beat Manny Pacquiao. I said, mate, he's got two arms and a head and bleeds red. I said, you know, I want this more than him. He's been at the top level. I'm climbing it. I said, you know, so I'm hungry. And I, again, like you mentioned, I had people in my team saying, look, man, if you don't take this fight, we're still in your corner. I said, man, you can either wait in the change rooms or buy a ticket, grab a hot dog and a Coke, kick back in the stands. I'm going out there and I'm winning this fight. I'm going to knock him out. And I went out there. I put him down in round two. And then round nine, it all ended.
Adam Coughlin is holding one as well. And he steps out and throws a bomb. And there is blood everywhere. With a minute left in this ninth round, Jeff Horn is somehow still on his feet. He's taking so many shots from Michael Zarafa. But he's not gone down.
He's got a heart of a fighting line, Jeff Horn. But he's in more trouble than a Werribee duck, mate. He's in so much trouble here. Still got 40 seconds to go.
He's hanging on and pushing forward and trying to hit this clock and get through this horrendous ninth round. And it is
He's iced him.
He's iced him. He's in all sorts of trouble.
Okay, let's go.
What a bomb.
He's about to pull off the most unlikely victory you have ever seen.
Unbelievable.
Michael Zarafa in a world of hurt. With 10 seconds left in this ninth round. And here comes Horn with a big shot. Zarafa, he's ready to go, but no knockdown. No knockdown.
The bell's going.
Oh my goodness. What have we just seen in this ninth round?
And, you know, the first thing I said, you know, they said, Michael Zarafa, you've done it. I said, and I grabbed the microphone. I said, mate, why is all surprised? I called this 12 weeks. Okay. You know, I knew it was going to happen. And I visualized exactly how it was going to happen. And it was crazy because me and my brother were talking about it. And I said, man, I'm going to get on the ropes and look at the crowd and just say, I told you all. I told the world. And that's exactly what I did.
So it's a cliche to ask. Did it change your life? But the widespread media coverage and a life in the limelight off the back of that, did that take some getting used to?
No, again, it was inevitable for me. I knew it was always going to happen. It was just a matter of when. It happened a lot longer than I thought.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted it earlier. I wanted to be a world champion 15 years ago,
yeah.
You know, so, but I know there's a patience game and it's a waiting game and it takes time and greatness, you know, does build into, you know, involve, it takes time, you know,
yeah.
So, but once it happened, I was like, you know, this is grass. This is where I want to be. This is exactly where I was going to be. And now it's my time.
So last year you made headlines for different reasons. The late withdrawal, obviously, the much hyped, much anticipated fight with Tim Tszyu. Now COVID was blamed by your team at the time from memory, although I'm not sure that was actually the reason, was it? What?
Negative, yeah. Well, I found out, you know, off records where, you know, what was said and what was promised and what was actually delivered were all, you know, misinterpreted, yeah. And wasn't actually the case. And sadly, I had to cop all the blame for that.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's panned out how it is and everyone's believing it is such a shame. You know, I'm not here to change people's opinion. Everyone's entitled to that. But I just want everyone to know the truth, that I didn't pull out of no fight. Like my trainers stated, you know what I mean? We asked for things that weren't delivered. We were promised everything and got nothing. And it's a shame that my name, like I said, is getting dragged through the dirt, getting called scared, getting called this, getting called that, when it's far from the truth. And, you know, like I said, I want this fight. You know, win, lose, or draw, I want to be involved in this fight. I know I can beat Tim Tszyu.
So, you know, the Tim Tszyu fight we wanted, you know, I still want, he wants it. The fight's the biggest fight in Australian boxing. Well, now it's the world, you know, the world want to see it now. So, you know, it's bigger than Mundine Green. And it's the fight that will happen, you know. I'll win my world title, he'll win his world title, hopefully. and that we can unify. The best man wins. If, you know, some whatever reason we both lose, we'll fight. So there's, you know, within 12 months, it will be the biggest fight in boxing history. And I promise you now, and I don't say things for the sake of it, I will knock out Tim Tszyu.
You're a remarkably resilient fella, but did you have your moments? I mean, because everyone who had a voice smashed her for the fact that this fight didn't go ahead.
Well, one of Australia's most anticipated fights is officially off this morning. Tim Tszyu will no longer fight Michael Zarafa in Newcastle next week. Zarafa's camp has withdrawn last minute, citing COVID-19 restriction concerns. His team, yes, they do not want to risk the prospect of having to quarantine, even though he says he wants to fight. Now, Tszyu will go ahead and fight Queensland-based boxer Stevie Spark instead.
Do you reckon he was just scared?
No, well, he says he wants to go ahead with it. I can't understand.
Ali's 100% right. He's scared of Tszyu.
Mm-hmm.
Scared. He's a little scaredy pants.
Scaredy cat.
Scaredy pants. Scaredy cat. Scaredy cat.
He'll have to face the music.
Please don't find out where we live.
Yeah. They said that, not me.
To be honest, Michael, you've let the Australian boxing public down. Again, only because of the words you spoke. When somebody speaks up and speaks like you did, mate, you've got to wear your shield and you've got to go in and fight. You can't, there can be no excuse. If I broke my both hands after saying what you said, I'd be fighting. And if they told me I had to quarantine for 6 months, I'd quarantine for 6 months to get this fight and prove what you honestly believe that you can do. So there's a lot of questions that maybe aren't answered. I haven't spoken to you, Michael, but I think that whoever gave you this advice has given you the wrong advice.
Was it a hard period?
100%. Mentally, I broke. You know, I went through a very, very dark place. I suffered with depression, you know, and then I had to deal with that. You know, the whole Dwight Ritchie thing. One of my good mates, Shane Tuck, took his own life from Richmond. You know, the loss of Jeff Horn in the rematch, you know, then strolling straight into the Tim Tszyu thing. I just felt like everyone was against me. I just felt like, you know, I did something wrong in the previous life or the next life, and I was paying for it in that moment. There was times where I literally didn't want to be alive. It was so bad. I was getting death threats from everybody.
What?
It was a very, very, for about a year, it was very, very dark and I didn't know what to do. And, you know, and that's another thing why I want to get this story, you know, my story out there as well, you know, that you can overcome anything. You know, I went through all of this and now I'm in line to fight for a world title.
How'd you get out of it? The spiral.
I just kept pushing. Just the grit and, you know, just, I literally just stayed quiet. And just soldiered on, man. Like, I just, every morning get up, I didn't break routine. And that's the key. You just don't break routine. As tough as it is, you know, it's like when someone has a breakup, you know, they feel yark and don't break routine.
And then when you stopped Isaac Hardman less than two rounds back in April, did it feel better to have a bit of a vent? I think you thank the haters.
The pretty boy, Michael Zarafa, you looked pretty tonight.
Oh, mate, I knew my experience. I told you, I've been all around the world. Everyone doubts me. I'm the villain. But, you know, someone had to shut him up, but I'm glad I did it in style, you know. But full credit to Isaac. He's one tough kid. I wish him nothing but the best in the future. We were enemies, now we're friends. We fought it out like men, and I was a better man on the night. And he's getting married in 2 weeks. I wish him all the best with his wife-to-be. Nothing but love.
It all happened pretty quick. Is it pretty surreal at the moment, or are you in the moment?
I knew all along. I told you, everyone doubts me. I know my ability. I know how hard we work. And I said, skills pay the bills. And again, I didn't do this. I did it for the haters. All the haters that doubted me and said I was going to get knocked out and the betting system, everything. Once again, I shocked the world.
Mate, this was a massive domestic fight. What's it mean to you?
It means everything. You know, this is 15, 20 years of my life. I've done nothing but box. I've lost everything. And I'm doing it all for my future to be, my family to be, my friends, people that stick by me and believe in me. And boxing's life.
100%. I love the haters. The haters, man, if they knew better, they'd be doing better. I almost feel sorry for them. You know, for them to get on there. And you know what the sad thing is? And I actually say this a lot because it's coming from parents. You know, I feel sorry for their kids, you know, because you know, if you can get on there and you're a parent and troll on somebody else's kid, what are you teaching your kids?
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I say this all the time. And as kids, you know, we fall down. Everyone, you know, encourages us to get back up. You know, get back up. You know, we fall off our bike. Get back on. Keep going. But as you get older, it turns. You want to accomplish something. You want to be something and do something successful. Everyone brings you down. You know what I mean? And it's a strange world we live in. We live backwards.
Yeah.
You know. And once I got that fight, I knew I was going to win. And again, I was the underdog, crazily, in that fight. And I said, if you want to make money, bet on me. You know, and sports bet and Palmer bet, and everyone lost a lot of money on me that night. That's their fault, you know.
So, how good?
I knew it was going to happen. He talked a lot of smack prior to that fight, and we attacked it. And that was general hate. We generally didn't like each other.
My two best mates are Samoan. How am I racist? That's craziness. You know, just because I'm going to punch this bloke's head in and he's Maltese, that's who cares? I don't care about that. I'm going to smash this bloke. It doesn't make him racist. Here you go, dickhead.
I don't need it, mate. Why are you getting emotional? You're getting emotional, brother. Hey, we got some tissues in here. Any tissue? You're emotional. Too much. You're emotional. Why are you getting so emotional? Hey, relax. You're emotional. Tomorrow night we settle it anyway. Yeah, you're just a sook. You're a sook. You're a racist sook. You are a racist. You're a racist sook. You're a racist sook. You're a racist sook.
I was going to ask you that. The build-up, it looked as though it went beyond the typical pre-fight bravado.
Well, he was a child, and you know the way he acted. His first payday was with me. His first, you know, people knew his name because he fought me. And, you know, it got to his head. He was calling me 6 months prior to the fight, FaceTiming me, abusing me. I was like, mate, you've signed a contract. You've made a mistake now, I said so, but you've signed a contract. I'll see you April 20. And then every time we're in front of each other at a press conference or whatnot, he'd try to attack me. And I just, I knew I was getting under his skin. And that's the night before when we had the face-off and the weigh-in, you know, it was when it really blew up and I ended up, you know, he scratched me on the neck and the feeling of the scratch triggered me off and I ended up cracking him twice before the fight. And he tried to go in there and I'm like, mate, you're an absolute joke. And I knew by that stage I had him. He was just, you know, he was crying at one point. He's a weak-minded person. But it was a good victory. I knew it was going to happen.
FaceTiming you in the build-up as well.
Mate, it was bizarre. I was generally shocked. I've never had that before. I actually found it funny. I said, mate, you're cute. I'll see you on April 20, mate, you know. But each to their own.
We're talking to Michael Zarafa on This Is Your Journey. It's thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. We'll be back right after this break.
You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals. Visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals. Visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
It's been great to have your company here on This Is Your Journey. It's thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Michael Zarafa has been our guest today. Michael, to get in the ring, you know, mentally, can you overthink it? Is there a danger of visualising too much?
Yeah, I used to do it all wrong. Like, when I was there, I used to just want to take your head off your shoulders and just fight and just literally heads or tail, flip off a coin. Now, you know, I see a sports psychologist in the lead-off of my fights, and I used to always think, how could somebody tell you what to do? And you know, it just makes you mentally switch on. And I found myself being present is the key. You know, if you live in the past, you're depressed. If you live in the future, you give yourself anxiety. You know, if you think about something now that you've done back in the days, you know, regardless if it was good or bad, you'll get sad about it because if it's a good thing, you'll want to go back to that time. And if it's a bad thing, you'll dwell on it. So you'll start giving yourself a bit of depression. You'll start saying, oh, I wish I could have changed this and I wish I could change that. If you think about a meeting or work or something that's happening in a week from now, you're stuck in yourself anxiety. And then that's when I learned to be present. Just be right here, right now. And, you know, when I work with my sports psych, he gets me in that moment that where even when I'm in the ring, you know, there's 10 to 15,000 people in the stadium, I can't hear anything. And it's so crazy. People say, oh, come on, man, how do you not hear anything? I said, I don't hear anything. I said, I literally switch off. I just hear noise. And, you know, as I'm walking, I feel the inside of my gloves. I'm telling myself, oh, you know, the silk in the inside of the gloves. I'm looking at the sweat dropping off his forehead. Even like in the shower, you know, the rain hitting your body, like that's being present, feeling it, you know, hands on the steering wheel, you know, turning the volume up on the radio, like just feeling it and hearing it. And, you know, and the key to go to a shopping center, and that's how I work on it. If you go to a shopping center, and you're sitting at a food court or something, you know, you just hear noise. You know, try to single out one conversation and then you'll be present. You'll be focusing just on what that one thing you're doing. And that's what I do in the ring. And that's how I just mentally stay switched on throughout the whole 12 rounds.
And mindfulness is huge, isn't it? Was the sports psych something that you've always had or something that you've learned that is beneficial to you? Has that been a process in itself?
Well, only the last two, three years, yeah, because I never believed in it. I was like, how can someone sit down and, you know, tell me to do this and do that and I'm going to now mentally be switched on? But it's so crazy. You know, I used to be that kid that would be driving and I'd turn because I'm at a traffic light for too long. You know what I mean? Like, because there's traffic, I'd be upset. It'd ruin my whole day, you know, and you know, the sound of a horn would upset me. Now, like, I'm just present, you know, things you can't control, don't waste sweat over. Yeah. You know, it's inevitable again. Like, it's fight night, you're in the back rooms. You know, you got two options, you know, be happy and go out there and fight, or be scared and go out there and fight. I choose to be happy, you know.
It is strange to think you're sitting there trying to stay calm and in the moment when you're about to go out there and belt the suitcase out of someone and him out of you as
correct,
well.
Correct. Well, that's what it is. It's kill or be killed, you know, and I just know that I've done all the right things. I've trained hard. You know, my preparation's been amazing. There's been no shortcuts. It's in God's hands now. You know, if I'm meant to be a world champion, if I'm meant to, you know, be successful and win a world title, it's going to happen.
So that's the mental. What about the physical? I mean, you've got to have that ability to embrace the pain, embrace the hurt, endurance-wise as well. You've got to enjoy it.
Yeah, I like looking good. If you look good, you feel good. If you feel good, you fight good. If you fight good, you make good money. If you make good money, you can win a world title. So there's steps to the whole process. But for me, like, it's all mental. Even though there's a lot of physical going in there, the body follows the mind. You know, if the mind gives up, the body will not follow. You could be as fresh as. You could have a whole week off rest and the body's done nothing. It's ready to go. It's 100%. But if the mind doesn't want to do it, the body won't follow. So for me, like, as much as it's tough and it's grueling, I keep the mind, you know, always happy and everything else just smooth.
Ever have a holiday break?
Never in my life. I've never had a day off.
What? Never. Ever?
Ever.
A day off?
Never. And everyone that knows me and everyone that, you know, follows my career will back me up on this. I've never had a day. Even when I was in hospital, I was literally running up and down the stairs of the hospital for a workout, yeah.
And why is this?
It's a mental thing. It's just no shortcuts, no days off, no weekends, no birthdays, no holidays, no days off.
What of overtraining or the risk of burnout?
Well, there's undertraining where you should be in overtraining. I believe in lighter days, 100%. You know, I won't go full throttle every day, but there's no need to have a day off. People say, oh, what about a holiday? I say, are you where you want to be in life? And there's nothing wrong with, you know, wherever, whatever anyone does, if you're on your own business, whether you're an athlete, whether you're, you know, you work, there's no comparison on what you do, but I say, are you where you want to be? And they're like, well, not really. I said, so then why are you having a holiday? What are you rewarding yourself for if you're not where you want to be? And they're like, well, you know, I just want to freshen up. How's that going to freshen you up? You're going to come back with less money and be in the same situation. You know, so for me, I want to be a world champion. Once I win a world title, I'll go on as many holidays as I can. I'm where I want to be. You know what I mean? Then it's my new chapter. That chapter's closed. What's the next chapter? But for me, I want to be a world champion. I'm not there yet, so I can't give myself rewards.
So two key dates coming up on that front. So December 11 in Orlando first?
Correct, yep. I'm fighting December, a tough Mexican in Orlando, as mentioned, and then we'll enjoy. Hopefully all goes well. You know, can never underestimate anybody. I'm training super hard. He's a tough Mexican. He's going to walk forward. There's a huge opportunity for him too if he beats me. And then enjoy Christmas and then back over to the US for a training camp with huge announcement for my world title fight.
Now, Golovkin?
That's where we're going.
March?
Correct.
Melbourne?
Correct.
Rod Laver?
Correct.
Packed?
Full stadium.
Oh, how good's that going to be?
It's going to be, you know, obviously boxing, anything can change. But at the moment now, he's happy to come to Australia. We verbally agreed and huge things fingers, on the horizon.
Fingers crossed
one
for that.
One fight at a time though.
Exactly. Now, before I let you go, am I right in saying you had three goals in life? One was to retire Mundine.
You've only been beaten by the very best in the world, Michael Zarafa. Look, you know, Anthony Mundine, this stage so far, oh, he got short there.
Here comes Zarafa opening up now on Mundine. Mundine up against the ropes, goes down. Goes down, Anthony Mundine.
This is exactly more or less what I expected, to be honest, because I didn't want Chuck to take this fight, but he insisted he was going to win it. But time beats all.
He's just making Mundine do a bit of a test to check that he's okay to continue. Zarafa gets on the front foot again, lines up that jab, gets the jab probing down to the body.
Minute of round one.
Minutes ago, Mundine needs to be mobile. Weaves under that right hook nicely. Down to the body, up to the head. Zarafa clips Mundine. Down he goes. On that M Group logo, it is all over. It is all over in the first round. Zarafa making a statement and calling on all and sundry. Who is next for the pretty? The crowd and bring next level boxing forward. Zarafa clips Mundine. Just with that right hand, but it was on the spot. It was where the punch needed to be to send Mundine down. He did the business down to the body, up to the head, changing levels.
Yep, on the side of the temple.
And just totally overwhelmed Anthony Mundine.
It's The American Michael, let's get ready to rumble buffer as your announcer. I think that's happened twice anyway.
Twice, yeah.
Are you ready? For the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, from the capital city of the United States of America, Washington, D.C., ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
And what else?
To win a world title.
There you go.
So, you know, and that's the thing, man. You set goals and set small goals. Yeah, as soon as you walk in my house, there's a massive whiteboard with my goals on it. And I highly suggest everyone does that. You know, everyone put small goals, you know, 12-month goals. You know, whether it might be, you know, for my next 12 months now is a world title, two major corporate sponsors, and an additional 100K saved. Three small goals for 12 months. But people start jumping too ahead. You know, they want to be like, oh, I want to drive a Ferrari. And yeah, you got to crawl.
Yeah.
You know, before you got to walk before you can sprint, you know what I mean? So.
Thanks so much for joining us today, mate.
Pleasure, mate. Thank you for having me.
What you do and how you do it's hugely admirable. And your discipline, your dedication to your pursuit just earns you instant respect. You've had to earn it too, all of it. And we're all hoping you do that early on next year and you bring that belt home. So well done on everything you've achieved. Best luck for what's to come.
God bless, brother. Thank you very much, so much.
And thank you for joining us also. You've been listening to This Is Your Journey for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. They're online, of course, tobinbrothers.com.au. And we'll catch you the next time we celebrate another great sporting journey.
Want to witness the world's biggest football game? Head to iCanWin.com.au, predict Australia's score with a crystal ball, and it could be you and a friend at the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 semi-finals, all thanks to McDonald's. Maccas, together and loving it. TNCs apply.